John Bachman, who pierces people's face. The K is for the kill, L is for the lover, and the M is for the mutiny, and I wish it didn't happen.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my drum?
Now the N is for not, oh no, my phone's just sinking. The B is for the peg leg that keeps me standing up. A Q is for quantum leap, R is for the rum, and the S is for the scurvy, which I wish I didn't get.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg.
That's underneath my boat. And B is for Mukitas, who plays a sour note. W is Tiasis, X marks a spot. Why? Cause I'm a pirate.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my grog?
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Tuesday, October 16, 2012. Israeli troops injures four Palestinians protesting settlers' attacks in the West Bank, and the Israeli army invades a number of communities and clash with local youth. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned. Four Palestinians were injured on Tuesday after the Israeli army attacked nonviolent protests at the Latrun Jerusalem Road, north of the occupied East Jerusalem, referred to by Israel as Road Number 443. The soldiers attacked the nonviolent protesters with batons and pepper spray, causing at least four injuries. Among the wounded was Ashraf Abu Rahma, who was violently attacked by the soldiers and was kidnapped after he was wounded. The nonviolent procession was held to protest the ongoing and escalating attacks carried out by extremist Israeli settlers against Palestinians, their orchards, farmlands, and holy sites. Several nonviolent protesters from Ramallah, Bethlehem, and Hebron, in addition to international peace activists, participated in the protest. Also in Jerusalem today, Israeli soldiers demolished on Tuesday a Palestinian home and a shed in Beit Hanina in occupied East Jerusalem, Al-Quds Media Center reported. The owner of the destroyed property stated that employees of the Jerusalem municipality claimed that the property was originally the property of a Palestinian from the occupied West Bank. Therefore, according to Israel, the property is considered to be absentee property and will be confiscated by Israel under the so-called absentee property law. Elsewhere, Palestinian sources reported Tuesday that clashes were reported between Palestinian residents and Israeli soldiers in Azababda village near the northern West Bank city of Jenin and in Beit Umar town north of the southern West Bank city of Hebron. No injuries were reported, but Israeli military sources reported that one vehicle was partially burned. In another incident, a number of armed extremist settlers uprooted 20 olive trees and 15 grape trees that belongs to the residents of Al-Khadr town, southern West Bank. The land in question is close to the illegal Israeli settlement of Ifrat, built on lands that belongs to residents of Al-Khadr. Farmers say the land had been repeatedly targeted by settlers, and that they have been repeatedly prevented from entering their own lands as the army requires them to obtain special permits from the military. And that's all for today from the IMEMC News. This was the Tuesday, October 16th News Roundup from the Occupied Palestinian Territories. For more news and updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. Today's report has been brought to you by Hussam Kassis and me, Ghassan Bannoura.
On the 7th of October, a boat departed from Naples, Italy, in the latest attempt to break the Israeli siege of occupied Gaza by sea. You may remember the incident in 2010 when Israeli commandos boarded the Mavi Mara, a Turkish aid ship to Gaza, at sea in international waters and killed many activists on board in a flagrant violation of international law. That act of maritime piracy had exactly zero effect as a deterrent. A major fleet tried to break the blockade last year. Two ships got through after Israel's attempt to barricade them in European ports. This time around, there are Israeli peace activists aboard, as well as activists from seven other countries, as the latest aid ship to Gaza is on their way from Naples, Italy. Afghanistan, 12th of October. An American soldier died from small arms fire attack in the Andar district, Ghazni province, Afghanistan. Afghanistan, 13th of October. An American soldier died from small arms fire in the Khanabad district, Kunduz province. Afghanistan, 13th of October. Two soldiers of unreported nationality and a foreign civilian working with NATO were killed in separate explosions on Saturday. As usual, details are scarce at this time. However, it appears that one of those attacks was at Southern Kandahar Province's National Directorate of Security, or NDS, headquarters, and also killed three NDS staff. Afghanistan, reported by one source 8 a.m. on the 16th of October. The Taliban is claiming to have killed eight bodyguards of Vice President Mohammad Karim Khalili in Parwan province. There are conflicting reports, but it appears Khalili was not present. Afghanistan, 15th of October. A NATO airstrike killed three children while attacking Taliban insurgents planting mines on a road in southern Afghanistan, according to Afghan officials. NATO's International Security Assistance Force confirmed an airstrike in Helmand province, its Nawa district, on Sunday, saying three insurgents died and it was investigating reports that children were also killed. Afghanistan, 13th of October. NATO forces claim a joint Afghan coalition force killed Haqqani leader Ramtullah in Logar province. They also announced the arrest of a Haqqani leader in Ghazni. The Haqqani are a powerful tribal militia associated with the Taliban on both sides of the Afghan-Pakistani border. Afghanistan, 14th of October. Seven UN employees were injured when a helicopter carrying them made an emergency landing in the central province of Bamyan. The helicopter was a Russian-made Mi-8 transport and reportedly made a hard emergency landing due to a mechanical failure, wounding two foreign and five Afghan employees of the United Nations Assistance Mission. Mr. Barack Obama, this goes on and on. Nothing ever changes. Now's the time to throw in the towel, bring all the troops home today.
Thank you.
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to WSQTradio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTradio@hushmail.com. The 11th of October, a third activist, Leah Lynn Plant, was sent to jail for refusing to talk to a Seattle grand jury supposedly investigating Occupy protests from May Day. In other words, three people are now being held indefinitely in jail for refusing to snitch on Occupy activists and anarchists in the Pacific Northwest. The Grand Jury's act of sending a third activist to jail has unleashed another wave of punitive retaliation by anarchists across the entire continent. In Wisconsin, on the 12th of October, two ATMs were smashed in retaliation for the grand jury fishing expedition and the jailings. This communique was then posted. Friends, we attacked two ATMs early this morning in the Fox Valley of Wisconsin, in addition to dropping two banners in two different cities. Our reason for choosing ATMs is because we don't like them. The banners read, "We will not forget Derek Williams / ACAB and release the PNW grand jury resistors. Stay strong, comrades." The reason for this action could be one of a thousand, but we did this specifically to express our rage against the Milwaukee PD murdering Derek Williams and the kidnapping of our Pacific Northwest comrades. Certain things in our mind cannot be forgiven, and lines must be drawn. Let's keep it coming! In Portland, Oregon, on the evening of October 11th, the same day Leah Lynn Plant was sent to jail for refusing to snitch, a protest march smashed windows at a Wells Fargo bank, a J.P. Morgan Chase bank, and a U.S. bank. A Walgreens also received a smashed window. The cops were unable to arrest any of the marchers, and this is part of a statement later posted to www.anarchistnews.org. Quote, "The judge, the feds, and the state know all too well that Matt, Kirio, and Leah will continue to resist their coercion. These ignorant state officials somehow live in a fantasy land where radical solidarity doesn't exist." Four banks along the path of our march were smashed, including rocks through multiple windows at an Umpqua bank, a large metal chair through a Wells Fargo window, and rocks through a Chase and finally a U.S. bank. The statement ends with the words, quote, "Smash all prisons and banks, topple the state. Solidarity to all in prison, and especially those queers, because we queers destroy with the fierceness. Free Leah, Matt, and Kidio." In Vancouver, Canada, on the 13th of October, yet another group smashed nearly all windows of an upscale restaurant, releasing this communique, quote, "A yuppie restaurant was attacked with nearly all of their windows smashed to oblivion. 3 days later, the windows have not been fixed. Anti-gentrification front, AGF, will continue our campaign against gentrification, capitalism, and our solidarity will be amped the F up. Go, go, Vancouver, smashy smash. Don't stop now. The rain has started coming down, and soon we'll all yuppie windows." And now here's something from WSQT. To all you jerks in the grand jury and the U.S. Attorney's Office, keep it up. The more people you jail for refusing to snitch, the harder your masters will be hit as their comrades rain down punitive strikes from coast to coast. On the 13th of October, as part of National Primate Liberation Week, D.C. area animal rights activists showed up at the home of the French ambassador. The French government owns 20% of Air France KLM, one of the last airlines willing to ship animals to vivisection laboratories like Huntington Life Sciences and others. Activists say that KLM in Air France KLM means killing little monkeys.
Your fault!
Your company!
Your fault!
Your death!
Your fault!
For the beagle, for the mouse!
We're here outside your house!
For the animals we will fight!
We know where you sleep at night!
For the animals we will fight!
We know where you sleep at night!
We want to give a community a word! Be your neighbor! Thank white world! Take your animals to vivisection laboratories across the world! Because he supports Air France KLM! Air France KLM is the largest supplier of animals to vivisection laboratories! We are here demanding an end to the French government connection to Air France KLM! We are here demanding an end to vivisection! So, cordial neighbors walking by with their pets, be careful walking by this address, because the French ambassador Francois will actually kidnap your animals and take them on Air France transportation to vivisection laboratories across the world!
It took the cops almost half an hour to show up. The Secret Service asked the same questions over and over and over, but had no power to actually do anything about the protest.
Put the vivisection industry until you sell all 20% of shares.
New staffers showed up at the French ambassador's residence and were pursued by protesters while the ambassador himself was caught standing in his doorway. That's the French ambassador right there.
You have no right to do that. Stop shipping animals to experimentation.
There are several airlines in the world that have actually cut all ties with the vivisection industry and demanded that they sever, that they not ship animals to vivisection laboratories across the globe.
Hey, France, shut them down!
Keep those planes on the ground!
Protesters must have been there an additional half hour while the cops stood on but could do nothing. Finally, protesters departed underway to a corporate target associated with Huntington Life Sciences.
So, Mr. Francois, Mr. Ambassador, until next time, until all are free, we'll be back! We'll be back! We'll be back!
No sleep for the wicked! On the 13th of October, as part of National Primate Liberation Week, D.C. area animal rights activists showed up at the home of Danaher Senior Vice President Jonathan Graham. Danaher is a corporate parent of Beckman Coulter, supplier of laboratory equipment to puppy-killing Huntington Life Sciences, or HLS, and Beckman Coulter has spent more money on lawyers seeking an injunction against protests like this one in California than the value of their $85,000 contract with Huntington Life Sciences.
Good evening, Jonathan Graham! We're here because of your continued involvement at Huntington Life Sciences! Huntington Life Sciences is a contract animal testing facility that murders 500 animals each and every day of the week for products like bleach, Splenda, and candy lotion! And Jonathan Graham, you are directly responsible because your company provides laboratory equipment to Huntington Life Sciences. We are
It took the cops 14 minutes to show up at this nighttime residential protest. The lights on their cars split the night, and cops used the PA systems on their cars to broadcast idle threats of arrest for giving out leaflets to passing cars, plus the output from the police radio in a futile attempt to intimidate protesters into leaving. Doesn't want people giving out flyers,
one,
I guess.
Two, three, four.
Open up the
it sounds like they're feeding the police radio into their PA system trying to intimidate people.
If you want to get some
really
press,
does.
Put your trash with your
press. If you want to get some press.
Of course, it means the scene out here is even noisier since the police are now also using amplified sound. You just heard an overly imaginative DC cop wrongly threatening protesters with arrest for approaching a moving vehicle to give out leaflets when protesters did not even react to that vehicle's passage and made no attempt to approach. Once again, you have another bluffing, idle threat from the Metropolitan Police Department. Unable to act on that threat, the cops stood by as protests continued.
We're not going to back down. We're not going to give in. Till our simple little demand is met. There are almost 500 animals that are trapped in the edge of a hellhole. That are murdered each and every day of the week. I'm free. You have a simple job, Johnny. A very simple job. Drop your ties with HLS. And vow never to do business. There's never such a thing again. And we have no reason to come back.
It's your choice.
Sir Jonathan P. Graham. Until next time.
Until
all are free.
When animal rights protesters left the Huntington Life Sciences protest at the home of Danaher Senior Vice President Jonathan Graham, police shadowed protesters through the streets as they attempted to get out of the area. Let's see if they play games here where there's no sidewalk. There is no sidewalk here.
Saturday night in the District of Columbia.
More people have been shot elsewhere in the city.
Wow.
All this to follow some animal rights protesters. We're done for the night, but they don't know it. We caught them both at home. Both the French ambassador and Jonathan Graham were at home when the home demos arrived. Here's Connecticut Avenue and its traffic, which is covered. All the way back to busy Connecticut Avenue. Same parade of cop cars hanging up traffic behind them. Doesn't work, buddy. Going north. Yeah, they are. Cops continued shadowing activists even on busy Connecticut Avenue, but soon traffic forced them to disengage.
Police officer on foot, which is located right over there, started following us and looking at us, and we successfully lost the cops as of right now, but it looks like another cop actually went and was turning around, so hopefully we can actually lose them for good this time.
All right. In the end, everybody got away safely. Jonathan Graham, the French ambassador, and all the rest of your corporate executives out there trafficking with Huntington Life Sciences, remember, it's not over until you dump Huntington Life Sciences. These protesters will be back. On the 15th of October, as over 50 people walked onto the occupied Keystone XL pipeline construction area in Texas, protesters showed up in front of the American Petroleum Institute here in D.C. to support the over three-week-long blockade of Keystone XL pipeline construction. The folks in front of API carried a symbolic pipeline wrapped in No Tar Sands banners while demanding clean energy from Texas to D.C. Here's what things sounded like from a video posted by Earthworks Action on YouTube.
From Texas to DC, we want clean energy.
From Texas to DC, we want clean energy.
It's just another way to die.
If there's one thing tar sands oil is not, it's clean energy. It's even dirtier than that so-called clean coal that exists only as a myth. In fact, production of tar sands oil can produce so much carbon dioxide as to make it up to 5 times worse than regular oil in terms of global climate change impact. Meanwhile, TransCanada thinks they can stop the blockade with their SLAP lawsuit, or strategic lawsuit against public participation, against 21 people alleged to be organizers of the Texas blockade. They must not understand that SLAP lawsuits breed retaliation both inside and outside of court. On the 15th of October, over 50 environmental activists and Texas landowners whose land is being stolen by TransCanada for the Keystone XL tar sands pipeline swarmed onto the construction site to reinforce the blockade that has now been in place for over 3 weeks since the 24th of September. There were two main functions of the massive walk-on the 15th of October. One purpose was to resupply the tree sit, as the police are attempting to starve out the blockaders who've been in place for over 3 weeks now. The other purpose may have been to punish TransCanada for their strategic lawsuit against public participation, or SLAP lawsuit, expanded to 21 people from the original 19 people in three organizations. Here is the timeline of how things went down on the 15th from the tarsandsblockade.org website. 8:15 a.m. Supporters rallied nearby to stop the pipeline. 8:30 a.m. A beautiful morning in what remains of our East Texas forest. TransCanada has clear-cut outside of their designated pathway and around the west side of the tree blockade, leaving a muddy path of destruction in their wake. 8:45. Over 50 blockaders walk onto the Keystone XL pathway.
Woo! Woo, woo, woo! But right now people are moving back and forth along the side of the road, initially moving underneath the tree village, to which the police said everyone had to move back over on this side, and it seems like everyone has complied pretty easily. Again, the police orders were, hey, 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 that's all the police actually said. And so far, everyone's moving along here.
9 a.m. One blockader arrested after sitting down in the path of the Keystone XL and refusing to leave.
They're arresting someone right now. He's cooperating.
Hey, he's got health issues. Yeah. No need to be rough with him. He's cooperating.
The officer did grab him and turn over really.
No need to be rough with him.
No, he's fine.
He's fine. Yeah.
So someone's being arrested right now who sat down in the roadway. Police officer did grab him and turn him very, very quickly, even though he was cooperating the whole time. The person does have health issues from what I'm hearing. Right now there is four officers gathered around him. There's one moving along the easement.
Well, y'all, you need to get behind that orange line, or you need to pan up too, please.
So a medic is asking to make sure that the arrestee is doing fine. Police officer is threatening him with arrest. And so the medic is going ahead and moving back.
You're not enforcing any law. You're enforcing a big company terrorizing landowners into giving their land away.
They're not. 9:06 a.m. Three blockaders have been arrested. We outnumber TransCanada's police 3-1. Two blockaders have locked down the excavator equipment protecting the tree blockade. 9:20 a.m. Livestream videographer has been detained and handcuffed, but they're still streaming. Police are trying to flank groups of protesters.
So it looks like they want us to flee, but at least I'm going to go ahead and back out.
Stop. Stop.
All right, I asked.
What do you want to do?
All right, so I'm being detained. I was unclear because my guitars were dropped. Can I ask who was giving you orders? Like, who was that dude?
We've already been detained, and you were on this side of the white line, which is the right-of-way, okay? So you understand where the right-of-way is. I'm not going to argue with you right now.
I want to make sure he's comfortable.
Just have Lorenzo sit right there for right now.
All right.
9:45 a.m. small group of ground blockaders break through the police line and enter the tree blockade. 9:50 a.m., Trans-Canada supervisors in an ATV shouting orders to their paid police force. 10 a.m., four arrests so far. Freelance journalist, live streamer Lorenzo Cerner has been released. The rally at the easement near the highway is going strong with chanting, singing, and lots of colorful banners. Trans-Canada is barking orders at the police. 11 a.m., today's first solidarity rally in Washington, D.C. is beginning now outside the American Petroleum Institute. 11:10 a.m., six blockaders have been arrested at the tree blockade. 11:35 a.m., picture from the D.C. solidarity rally. Over 60 people turned out on their lunch hour to stand with the Texas blockade and stop Keystone XL. 12 p.m., noon, we just did a call-in with the solidarity rally in D.C. Quote, "We are not deterred by the legal and police repression we are facing. We will continue and we hope you will help in this fight against the Keystone XL. 12:50 p.m., we have now confirmed that a 70-year-old woman participating in the blockade was thrown to the ground and tackled by TransCanada's hired thugs. 1:55 p.m., at least eight people have been arrested after walking onto the Keystone XL clear cut in defiance of recent repression. Two blockaders are still locked to a huge excavator in the path of the toxic pipeline. 3:20 p.m., solidarity rally in Denton, Texas has begun. 3:50 p.m., two blockaders who locked themselves to Keystone XL machinery have been arrested. A crowd of supporters stood by and cheered for them as they were taken into police custody. These two most recent arrests make 10 total for the day. 4 p.m., our first arrestee has been released without charges. He was arrested early this morning when he sat down in a Keystone XL's pathway and refused to move. His defiant action helped delay police officers and allowed other blockaders to breach the police line and enter the tree blockade. After he was arrested, he was made to lie face down in the mud for several hours. He continued to refuse compliance with the police, and citing health concerns, had to eventually be removed on a stretcher. He was later released from the hospital without charges. 4:15 p.m., solidarity photo in front of the TransCanada office in Westboro, Massachusetts. Thank you. 6 p.m., six of the eight arrested today have been released from jail on charges of criminal trespass, which is a Class C misdemeanor. The bail was set at $1,500 each, a total of $9,000. The two blockaders who locked themselves to Keystone XL machinery will see a judge in the morning. Protesters threatened with a strategic lawsuit against public participation are not the only people that TransCanada is relying on court processes and legal harassment to try to control. They're also relying on eminent domain to get land for the pipeline, playing every dirty trick in the book, like a mafia shakedown, as Democracy Now! Put it, to get the so-called right to cross farmers' land whether they want it or not. Here's a Democracy Now! Interview aired on the 15th of October with a Texas landowner impacted by TransCanada's dirty process.
I wanted to bring Susan Scott into the conversation. Susan, you own land in the area where the XL pipeline will run, and you accepted over $20,000 from TransCanada for access to your land. What is your concern now?
Well, let me clarify that from the very beginning. The reason I accepted the money is because I was forced to accept it because of what Ron said. They threatened me with a lawsuit of eminent domain, so I just figured I'd go on and take the money and do something with it. So tell everybody to put their shovels up. It ain't there, okay? So, you know, from the very beginning, I have told them I did not want them. I never, ever back down on that statement from day one. I am very concerned Mostly it was a selfish concern to start out with. I didn't want my pristine forest messed up, screwed up, whatever you want to call it. Didn't want it touched. And so I held them off for 2 years. And then he told me that they had eminent domain. And now then it's become an unselfish thing. When I really found out what they're fixing to put through there, it's going to ruin our water system. It's going to take away everything that we worked for. And from the very beginning, they never told me the truth. And I just watched a thing on TV about Geraldo at Large the other night, and he was talking about it, and it was pretty bad. And I feel like that our constitutional rights have been just wiped completely away, that we don't have anymore. I feel like that the government has bailed on us, and I've told that openly. And I've wrote the president and all the commissioners and whoever else, and their response was to pass the buck to somebody else. And I don't know what else I can say other than that. I've always said I didn't want them. And yes, I did take the money because they said they were taking my land anyway.
Huh. I want to get your response, Susan Scott, to this statement to the New York Times from TransCanada spokesperson Sean Howard regarding the concerns of Texas landowners like you who have about the pipeline crossing your property. He said, quote, "We've always been upfront about the materials that are going into the pipeline."
That's not true. They never, ever would tell me. I called that Randy Hudson in Houston several times, and he said, "Well, that's I'll get that information to you right out. That's been 2 or maybe 3 years ago. I forgot what time it was. But I never have. They never have told me the actual contents of it, of the pipeline, period. And they keep saying it's not tar sands, but we all know that it is. I mean, it's quite obvious.
TransCanada, take your Keystone XL pipeline and stick that in your pipeline where the sun doesn't shine.